So, the invitation is to do another go around. I'll just send the mic to Alia and then go around. And please share, going back to George's first question, modified to, where is your deepest curiosity now, an hour and a half later, after what we've done in part one? Where is your curiosity now? That would be good to know. And also, any observation or reflection coming out of part one? And please keep it to half a minute or a minute at the most. And let's see if we can make the circle closer to a circle, because someone is watching. Whether when we say circle, whether we are performing a circle. So, Alia, will you begin for us?
My original deepest curiosity was, and on reflection, I feel so blessed because I have a dozen transformative communities of practice, à deux, or trois, and apparently other people don't have that. So it's kind of interesting. My original question was whether what would be the value of having a group that met regularly that was dedicated to this, rather than having friends, professional friends that challenged each other to grow vertically. And I think that both and would be a really good idea. So that's what I've reached at the moment.
Yes, my deepest curiosity is at this time, is what does it take to bring together a community of practice among very diverse people, not people who are in the same development stage, developmental stage, not necessarily. And is that possible? Because that's what I face.
Sorry, I missed the first bit, but I can imagine what...
Deepest curiosity and any observations or reflections from our first part.
Well, what I learned from the first part is, again, the importance of listening deeply to each other and to ourselves at the same time, and the importance of dialogue, of how we can see, how we know ourselves by listening to someone else. It's like a mirror, feedback loop. And what is my deepest interest is what can I do to help bring this into being in a way that makes the people I interact with feel alive and engaged and want to show up their potential.
My deepest curiosity is how to bring conditions for creativity with different modes of being and doing, and also at different stages of evolution of consciousness.
My curiosity shifted to the listening part. Oftentimes, I am invited to help change something, and it shifted to invite people to compassionately listen first, to learn that task as the first step in dialogue.
the curiosity that has appeared for me is I'm quite curious what new is going to emerge. What new for both me and what new for us? What is the new element that's emerging? And then a new curiosity for me is what is that going to resonate with within me and within us? So,
my initial curiosity was what is a transformative community of practice? And I'm deeply touched by the level of connection on a personal level that I've seen. That moved me more than just this professional talk about the domain-related topics. So what I'm interested in now is how it's required to operate from this level of awareness more often, how to bring this to life more often, and how to also spread it in the way that other people can participate in this community of practices.
Yes, I share a similar interest and curiosity. Just what does it take, and how can we communicate this to others, and how can we be aware of what some of the difficulties may be along the way, and how to mitigate those difficulties? Yeah, thank you.
My curiosity lies around the fact that here we are all together, we are all doing amazing work. How can we do it together? Co-create something new. So you evolve, I evolve, and all of us, and make a greater difference with our personal and professional lives. So I'd like to see maybe a list of people who are interested in doing collaborative, co-creative work. And I'm definitely in that. That's why I came this time. Thank you. Thank you.
Something that struck me about the group was a deep level of trust that emerged very quickly. So the sharings were surprising to me that they would trust not only themselves who were listening to each other, but it's as if they weren't even aware of the larger circle. And at the same time, this group held this inner circle. And so my curiosity is about the field that can be created through trust, and the field that holds the whole transformative community that actually calls it forth and emerges it. Yeah.
My curiosity is how to hold the tension and invite spirit or the evolutionary process for help.
Well, I realized after this morning, or this first section, wasn't this morning, that I have a community of practice with my sister. So it's a community of two. And she said one day that the work that we do together helps our whole family, even though they're not in our community. They're only circle about it. And so that's one of my curiosities. Can there be transformation outside the circle? Because the circle's doing the work. And then the other one is because she's so familiar and because there's such deep love there, and a longing for more communities of practice. How do you go from the familiar and the old to something fresh and new, where you don't know each other, where you are faced with a stranger? I know Thomas talks about that. What makes someone a stranger, and how do they become an unstranger? So I have some curiosity around that, the newness.
it's interesting that I took this session. I just arrived and I just made a deep dive into it, and I immediately connected a few things in my life, especially the fact that what you said around bringing in people from outside. I'm actually thinking around doing this in Switzerland, bringing together the ULAB community and the Art of Hosting community, which is about capacity of 800 people in Switzerland, and at the same time invite maybe also traditional policymakers and decision makers into this space and do this on a mountain hut retreat sort of thing. And at the same time, yeah, and so that inspired me, and that's why I came back, because I think we have a lot to do and a lot to learn together in these communities, and we're just getting started, and I can see that on a few other communities that I'm also involved in, how difficult it is actually for the people doing transformation, getting these spaces and getting these transformations, which is what I call transforming the transformers. Thank you.
My first curiosity was, what's next? And after the various rounds, I've come to what's now, particularly for me, what is my part? And I have been very impressed also by everybody being able to make that deep dive so quickly. And I'm still hoping that some answers about how do I do that? How do I make my part in doing? That's always been a challenge for me. And I really appreciate my feeling of calmness being around all of you. So thank you.
One big curiosity of mine, besides some that were already mentioned, is if you think in terms of network, community of practice, and meshwork, first of all, what is the specific role of community of practice in those three things? What is, let's say, the fullest potential of a community of practice in that sense?
My curiosity is similar to what was mentioned, how it's possible to make this community with people from with different developmental stages. And so this observation is a bit linguistical one. I was bit surprised about the difference between transformational and transformative, because as a non-native English speaker, I had no idea there's some difference. So thank you for this.
My curiosity right now is how big is the hole? Not the hole with H-O-L-E, but how big is the hole with W-H-O-L-E? How big is the hole that we can put our arms around? How big is the hole with which we can feel an intimate relationship with? Let me tell you what I am speaking from. I am intimately aware of, keenly aware of, and painfully aware of all those brothers and sisters who couldn't afford to come to a place like this, whose life is suffering or terminated too early by bullets. And, you know, I can't dissociate myself. I can't sit here and facilitate workshop without knowing that I owe something to them, I owe something to my grandchildren, who I wish that they grow up in a better world, And I feel I also owe to those ancestors who were living and dying for a better world, thousands and millions of them. So here we may think that there is only 18 or 20 of us, but in fact there are millions sitting with us. And so how big is the whole that transformative communities of practice relate with? And that's also helps me distinguishing from other forms of communities, like spiritual communities that live in the eternal, timeless truth. I happen to be a member of a spiritual community that is engaged in living the mystical principles of life. But to me, that's not enough. When I am thinking of transformative communities of practice, I feel something that is not timeless. It has a timeless dimension. The evolutionary dimension is timeless, but it's also happening in a specific time in human history when one civilization is dying and the new has yet to come. And in that moment, I feel that it is my responsibility to create something that help give hospice to the old world with respect and honor, and help the new world to born. And so that's why I couldn't feel very enthused to be part of or initiate transformative communities of practice without that dimension that goes beyond personal and professional and organizational evolution, that also includes social evolution, that includes the support, participation in the movements, the many movements that exist for civilizational renewal, from Otto Scharmer to reinventing organizations and many, many others. So transformative communities of practice, the way I hold a space for that distinction relates to this historical moment and relates to, in an active way, that means that those people who are interested to form this kind of transformative communities, they would need to commit to learn how to facilitate not only personal, professional, organizational transformation, but how to facilitate social transformation, how to facilitate the transformation of social systems. And I'm not talking of political revolution, changing the government, nothing like that. By social systems, I mean the organs that make up the social body, like the healthcare system or education system or cities. We are blessed that the principal thought leaders of the cities intelligence, Marilyn Hamilton, is sitting with us. She knows a lot about the evolution of such important social system as cities. And we are all part of one or another, or more than one, social systems. So the path from organizational evolution to work also on the evolution of social system is not very difficult, because well, I just want to give the mic to Anna, who is working in the healthcare system, and she could just be satisfied to reform, try to improve her workplace, but I know enough about her work, since she's my wife, to know that she cares for the evolution of the whole healthcare system. Could you say something about the connection between organizational and social system?
George, you're bringing a personal thing into our...
Well, what I can say is that I know that I can work very well with individuals as a coach, as a mental health practitioner, as a herbalist, but unless I feel it lands in a system that supports people in their development, it doesn't energize me in the same way. I need I encounter every day that the potential in the people that I meet is huge, and it's just going to waste. And that is giving me a lot of pain. And for that, I feel we need to create enabling structures to help access each other's potential and not wait for someone else to come along. And that is also what I am, my tension, because it's my tension of how to create those enabling structures, I am looking in the system continuously where to find allies, where to find openings, where to collaborate and to open minds and hearts and the will to change something. And yeah, so I think the transformation of the healthcare system, if that can transform, other systems can also transform, because it's about our well-being, our health. And yeah, that's all I can say.
Marilyn, would you want to share with us your perspective or a story, anything about the relationship of personal and organizational and systems? City system connection.
Thank you for the invitation. And I was thinking, as I was listening to Anna, I've just recently moved to Findhorn in Scotland, and many of you may know it as the UK's oldest eco-village. So they've actually been living for 55 years as an intentional community, and they actually were homeless to start, the founders, and they had to discover how to grow their own food and their own well-being. And they had a very strong spiritual practice to start with. And only just recently, in the last year, 6 months to a year, a new organization has emerged from the community that's actually formed a purpose statement. And last week, I sat through a retreat that looked at a form of governance, sociocracy, and the subtle realms. And you know, what really came alive for me relates to what I was thinking about what Anna was sharing, and that was they were able to anchor this whole exploration and inquiry around the purpose, because they have clarity now with how to express what they have to serve the world with. So Findhorn does call for deep inner listening. That's one of their principles. And co-creation with nature. But they also consider that work is love in practice. And what I really feel these three principles come alive as possibilities now is because they're anchored in a purpose statement that actually captures how they're going to live these principles in the world. And I think that for any system to change, like a healthcare system, there has to be an intention to a purpose greater than ourselves. Yeah, so.
Any
So what I hear as a common theme is that for making the movement of expanding our sphere of concern from personal, professional to social, we need some kind of structure to support. We have structures for professional development, many of them. Traditional communities of practice does that. But we don't have yet structures for evolutionaries, people who are engaged, not necessarily practicing already the facilitation of social change, but at least engaged in learning how to do that. And of course, there is really no other way to learn but in action. And we need each other's company. Even at the traditional community of practice level, we already learned that practitioners develop faster when they are engaged, when they are exposed to each other's mental models, each other's challenges, questions, and it's even more so for the transformative communities, which is a new kind of collaboration that embrace all these different levels. So a couple of other things that we learned so far from our explorations, or very early initial explorations about TECOP. TECOP is the way of pronouncing transformative communities of practice, because that would be too long. So one thing is that they differentiate from one another by their domain of practice. The common domain is the vertical development as a practice, and there is also differentiating domains, like what we were anticipating in convening this workshop, that the domain, because it is happening inside the track of the conference called Teal Organizations, and it's very much focused on organizational reinvention. So a common domain of a transformative community would be the organizational reinvention. And as we started exploring that, it wouldn't, at our level of consciousness, it wouldn't be possible without also including personal and professional reinvention, moving to the next stage. But there might be other TECOPs with other domains. Like I was contacted by an old friend of mine who is the founder of a large international network focusing on societal innovation, and he asked me whether I would be interested to give a webinar on forming a TECOP for the network of societal innovation. And of course I said yes. And so I can envision TECOPs with differentiated domains in various areas, with the common domain across all would be the vertical development. How far are thinking, and there is also a possibility the integral practitioners take up. Applying principle, and they want to create a take up in their domain, they can certainly count on us to support that. Another thing that I learned from the course that we gave at Meridian, this graduate course with adult learners, and it just happened to be that they are spectators of one community or another. And that made a big difference in their level of engagement, because they knew that what they learned in that prototype, first step, baby steps in the prototyping process, they can immediately use it in their respective communities that they facilitate. So that made it clear for me that it is really necessary, not only useful, but even necessary, that members of the TechUp have a specific context in which they can use what they are learning. For example, Alan asked a question that touched me, because I felt the heart space from which it came when you asked, how about forming communities with people at different, diverse stages of development? And because that came from your sense of human solidarity and the need of supporting the development of the whole. So I would envision that in the transformative communities of practice, there will be people who have this level, this stage of development that they feel necessary for their own next stage, to engage in personal, organizational, and social evolution. And among those members of TechUp, there will be a number of them who would facilitate communities with that kind of beautiful challenge of people with diverse, different stages of development. And it's almost the definition of a community is that people are not, it's not homogenous, it's never homogenous. In practical terms, it would, being a member, it would require probably a year-long commitment, and it will be invitational. It will be open in a sense that anybody can apply for membership, and we would make clear what are the criteria, what is required. We have not yet formalized it, so you are really at the very early stage and in a sense of co-creators of what can happen.
So George is just scraping some of the landscape of distinctions that have already emerged for him. And I'm hoping that a number of the curiosities got responded to in your remarks, George. When I sit with the circle of sharing curiosities, what is present for me is the word how. You know, how, right? So if you would indulge a ritual moment here, I'll say how three times. Each time you give a one-word answer, okay? And I'm also requesting what the word is, and the word is practice, okay? So I'll say how, and you say practice, okay? You don't have to do this. We'll come back to the well, have to and not have to later. Okay. So how?
Practice.
How?
Practice.
How?
Practice.
How? Thank you. Thank you. So, there are a few nodes that I'm hoping to at least skim over in terms of your curiosities. In talking about purpose, Marilyn, you somewhere in there used the phrase coming alive. And so this third node, personal, professional, the third node, which we've referred to as the evolutionary dimension, evolutionary force, we could also use the word spirit or spiritual there. And we can also use the term purpose. We know we're in the same, and it's not a place, it's not a level, it's a dimension, an ever-present, everywhere dimension. How do we know, here's the how again, how do we know we are engaging that dimension personally, right? The dimension is always there, but something, we go, our engagement, we come in and out of engagement with that dimension. How do we know? How do we know that? What's that? Yes, there is a certain practice. There is a certain practice. Many of us, likely all of us, are in some ways already engaged in that. But in the context of this, I'd like to bring it up this way, in terms of bringing it into the room. If you ask yourself right now, what would be difficult for me to share here? We won't do it, by the way. We won't do it. So you just open up your awareness to what would be difficult for me to share here. What we're after is the flavor of difficulty. Has something come to your mind what would be difficult to share? Relevant, of course. Past experience with communities, you know, who has not here had past disappointing experience with communities, right? Who has not experienced often betrayal, some form of betrayal, etc. So are these longings are burdened with our past experience. So that's just an example of where it could be difficult to share something about longing around the future. So, now consider, if you were to share this, it would feel difficult. I'm not inviting us to do it right now, given the circumstances. But if we were to approach the difficulty and share what we have come in contact with right now, that would be alivening. We would come alive. That would be, there are many ways to engage evolutionary force. In this context, I'm emphasizing engaging evolutionary force by choosing to do what's difficult. And I'm doing so partly to remind us that this third node that we spoke about, the third dimension after personal and professional, because it is evolutionary force, it is neither pretty nor ugly. It is what it is, and engagement with it in a sustained way is an engagement with difficulty. And developing and sustaining transformative communities of practice is difficult. That could be one of the most important truths to share with you. It's just difficult. And because so many of us are quite familiar with development, the theory and practice of development, then you can get that. Development is difficult. The letting go of a particular way of being and traversing the gray, the liminal, the in-between is difficult. And so in terms of the how, practicing choosing difficulty. And that is a community of practice has to have come to a particular developmental level to even understand that one can practice choosing difficulty. In a way, that practice opens the door to the next practices that need to be developed by the teacup itself. In other words, there isn't a menu that what is driving development in the teacup is not just given practices, which there are some, and maybe we'll get into them, but the next practices that have to do with that context, that domain, and the spectrum of differences, including developmental stages, that are present in that context. And that the practices have to be able to be responsive to the differences that are present, including developmental stage differences, so that any difference that is being denied, disavowed, suppressed, repressed, trivialized, or tolerated will arise as a barrier to the development of the teacup. So, what are the practices of being able to recognize and engage differences? I'll just say a little bit more because I can just see how much is happening in your minds and want to begin drawing on that. There are practices around developmental compassion and developmental humility that are key in terms of developing and sustaining a teacup where there are developmental differences. There is a certain kind of excitement and comfort, and that's good when it's all peers, developmental peers. But the curiosities, because of in our work, this challenge of developmental differences so present. So by developmental compassion practices, I mean simply the practices of those of us who are blessed with the later stages, how we accept responsibility and accountability for the experience of those who are less developed. And there's a whole range of not taking that responsibility. When it goes all the way to one edge, we call that abuse of power. And there's also abuse of developmental power. But there's a whole other spectrum of responsibility and accountability practices for holding the privilege and blessing of later stages that can make all the difference in what happens when there are developmental differences. The flip side of that, and it's at least as important, we could refer to as developmental humility practices, which has to do with how people who are at the earlier stages relate to people at the later stages. And we see this most clearly practiced in healthy spiritual communities. Uh, whatever is good, and there's plenty of good in Doshin Roshi's Sangha, is partly can happen because their developmental humility is a requirement in that context. Now, in our professional lives, that's rarely, because the fear of the boss is not developmental humility, you know, right? It's something else, and it's what are those practices? So, for example, in martial arts, developmental humility is established in a very, very apparent way. And you know that, right? It's the color of your belt. You don't even get to come on the mat without accepting where you are developmentally and how you will relate to people with more advanced belts, period. And if someone with a earlier belt, if a white belt gets injured during an exercise with a brown belt, the sensei knows exactly who to turn to understand what happened to the brown belt, right? And so of course, all the sluggish part of our green structures will struggle with this part. And it's a real challenge, a cultural challenge, of how do we bring in the developmental humility practices? Because the two then build on each other, you know, the developmental humility and the developmental compassion. You could say, well, enough has been said. So, George, unless you want to jump in next, we could let the mic loose.
Yeah, and I don't know how much time left.
30 minutes.
I would like us to hear from you, particularly those practical questions that would help you to sense into whether a TIL facilitator's transformative community of practice that would work on the domain of organizational renewal as a common focus, besides the vertical development, whether that would be a right place for you, or if not a TIL facilitator's community of practice with that kind of organizational focus as a common domain, take up with any other domain focus would be a right place for you. So I guess that your questions would help not only to you to sense into that, but also it would help.
As well as your observations and reflections, and the invitation is to lean towards speaking the difficult.
There's a certain sense in which the kinds of compassionate challenges that would stimulate vertical development are independent of stage. I'm remembering, was it the integral parenting people that I identified what they called elevator values, kindness, curiosity, and one other, I think, that are the characteristics that help the folks at any stage to move. And facilitating the strength of those characteristics would help with the diversity within any particular community of practice if the focus were on that. It's sort of the common humanity aspect of transformative communities of practice, if indeed our development is, if there are frameworks that help us understand our development, that's not as diverse as the particulars of our work. So a transformative community of practice doesn't have to be people who do all the same kind of work. That's another aspect of what I'm reflecting on. That's it for the moment. I can't articulate my other thoughts right now.
When you used the word humility and illustrated it with the color of the belt, I think for me it also goes the other way around. I mean, in terms of, especially in a group of people with different levels of development, that people with the later stages of development recognize that there is still some shadow work to be done most of the time. And that by not acknowledging that, then we do not play those of us who may fit there, may not actually exercise our responsibility and accountability. So I'm just aware of that, especially I will give a concrete example. Portland is a fairly green town, not just because it has lots of trees, but it is culturally green, largely. And there is a tendency on post-conventional people like me to say, oh my gosh, not recognizing that, of course, I have some green part in myself that maybe I haven't completely digested and worked with, so I'm even more reactive. So I think humility goes both ways. Yeah. Humility on the part of people that recognize that, yes, there are different perspectives that are possible, but also, and for us engaging communities of practice that are different, to be aware of these things is very important. At least I'm really speaking for myself here.
Yeah, thank you, Elaine. Next time I speak about it, I will do exactly that. And I was reflecting on now what happened in the way I spoke about it. And what I can find so far is that that somehow I absorbed the humility in the direction you're speaking about in the compassion part. But I think suggesting that compassion goes this way and humility goes that way is a mistake that you just helped me with. Yeah. Think of this as a glass of wine, you know, or a glass of whiskey if you're ready for difficulty.
Wine is good.
I have to be difficult for me not to go to the restaurant right now.
I have maybe a very short story to share around what is all the time coming when I hear you talking about this transformative community of practice. And in Switzerland, we had a very fortunate person who was giving a lot of money to a very creative bunch of people that self-organized all around the world, change makers. And what is forming was what we call Amanitas, and we formed a mycelium sort of underground. And you can find us on the web, which is amanitas.cc. And one of the mushrooms that is popping out of this mycelium that was that we said we have to become visible, because a lot of people are saying, well, you are creative change makers. Now tell us the next level of sustainability. What is that looking like? Be concrete. And we said, yeah, we are weaving a mycelium and we are connecting and we are... Actually, what we did was actually we formed like this, really like this transformative community of practice, but not visible for the outside world, so to say. And then we created a house, or we rented a house, which was demolished down, or is already demolished down, and we rented it for a couple of months, from May 2017 until March 2018.
And what happened, that was an ordinary neighborhood, like in a very traditional Swiss capital with Bern, and we called it Happy Bern Lab. And we had a lot of money, of course. We could afford that. And we had like over 350 people from around the world coming to that house for retreats from the neighborhoods. We made like really bringing people together that usually don't meet, have conversations. So that is for me, it's coming back all the time when I hear you talking about this transformative community of practice. What we created was actually a physical space. And it's gone now, and I really miss it. AMANITAS, amanitas.cc. And you can find the whole playbook and the whole history of the project on the website. That was timing.
You spoke about heart broken open. And Parker Palmer talks about two ways of being, having one's heart broken open. Broken open apart or open. And that's a big distinction. And I think he says rightly, and I think that applies particularly when we start accepting the difficulty of being in communities at various levels of development, various levels of suffering, that to accept one's heart being broken open, because that helps us to hold the tension between what could be and what is, and find the courage to move forward. I love that distinction, that it's only because I accept first to have my heart broken, but in a way that I am welcoming any possibility of moving forward with that rather than despairing. That is really very important for me, and especially in very diverse communities, I would say, that would apply.
The heart breaking open and welcoming that, welcoming the power of discomfort, of uncomfortableness, is it's something that requires both evolution and awakening, and it can be perceived as being quite painful. That's the heart breaking apart. When that is made real by practice and a living community that's doing that, it is a most powerful, transformative process. So I want to really just appreciate that you're holding that as a principle and a practice. One of the requirements in our community is that you're willing to be uncomfortable. If you're not willing to be uncomfortable, then your heart is already broken down, not broken open. Then that uncomfortable, that willingness to be uncomfortable, is followed by a willingness to be open, honest, and vulnerable. And that has to be modeled by the leadership, which is not easy, I've found. It's quite humbling, often and repeatedly. So I just wanted to notice the resonance between what you're saying and what I've found by making many, many mistakes, and deep gratitude.
George, I'm wondering if we could do another simulation.
Well, I just wanted to say a couple of things that I think of about communities in cities. Really working in communities was what took me to cities. And lots of people ask me, you know, so what's the integral, you know, what's the most, the city that's integral? And I say, well, actually, you know, integral is a process. It's evolving. And I expect, just like individuals evolve through different stages, that communities do too, and that within a city, and organizations do too as well, and within a city, all of these different groups and individuals are dynamically developing and evolving together. They form a kind of ecology of communities. And I think when I'm considering humility and compassion, that there's some communities who are born with a purpose to hold that on behalf of the whole community or city. So it isn't just about each one of us practicing it, but that there is a kind of a meta view of looking at all the communities together. And and I myself have had very personal experience of, I'm glad you brought up Parker Palmer. He has saved me for many years from the dilemmas and challenges of living in community. One of his favorite, or one of the sayings that has been favorite to me, is he said, a community is a place where the person you least want to be with is. And as soon as they move away, a person equally difficult to get along with will move in. So for me, that has always been like a really beautiful way of framing the necessity to have compassion for others and for yourself. But the curiosity I have about cities and teal organizations is, it would be really interesting to think about teal organizations of holding themselves as a community of practice that are emerging, so enough of them will actually change the city. So like in complexity, we think of 10 to 12% of a system having to change before the whole system, before everything comes along for free. So I'm looking for that now. I'm looking, where are there places where there's enough organizations who are aspiring to teal, who are practicing in teal, who are connecting with each other on, it might be in business and, you know, chains, supply chains. But in the city, I think it's going to be more complex than that. So it might be a faith community that's holding a complex enough view. And I'm sensing that is, well, that's a curiosity I have. Can I see any of these clusters arising? So they're clusters of, you know, constellations of capacity. It's just some thoughts that both your works have really inspired in me.
And what you're saying, Marilyn,
pops this idea. I'm just imagining you making an announcement early this week, time and place, and I think there are two or three evenings that are open, and then we just gather around this and see who shows up. That would be, I would show up, you know. So, you know.
And because I have the same curiosity, in fact, that's why I started Enlivening Edge, because I was curious, what are all those organizations? And those of you who are subscribing in Live and Engage, you can see that there are quite many of them. And on this wall, you will probably see later this week a big chart with mapping the teal ecosystem. What are the different meetup groups and online networks, and there's a whole workshop about the Teal Organizations Mapping Project. So our idea of this whole Teal Organizations track to become a booster and enlivener the whole visible to the part and why context in which the TEAL facilitators community, transformative community of practice, is an in. And I'm curious that how many of you would consider to mark on your on the sign-up sheet, it wouldn't oblige you to anything, but put just an asterisk to your name, and then we would know that you would be interested to receive an invitation and more information when it's coming into being.
So I'm suggesting a 3-minute simulation, George, which where the difficulty would fall on you. If we were to pretend that we've gathered this group of about 15 or so of us, and we're about to launch a teacup, and you're going to be guiding us over a span of many months, and your task, should you decide to accept it, would be to really cut to the chase in terms of anybody who wants to get off the plane can do so now, kind of way. I'm curious what George would say about what we are embarking on in such a simulation. Like, here's what you need to know about what we are going to be doing here. Right. Yes?
Yep. So it's not a fake news, it's a simulation news. What I'm, we will launch the community this fall, and between now and advisory process, engaging in a collaborative inquiry about the design of, including what will be, get the flight ticket for this journey.
The condition of the simulation,
yes,
is that this people have already arrived for the first meeting of the teacup, and now you're clarifying some key points about the journey ahead, the expedition, and giving the people the opportunity to get off the plane if they would like, but just what you would say at the beginning of such an expedition.
So I don't know enough about the conditions in which you arrived, but I hope that you all have some kind of facilitation practice in which you are hosting, facilitating the evolution of a community or an organization, working with an organization, and now that we are all together, now that we've met, we can ask what is our real work together beyond the work that each of us is doing. And that is the invitation, and that's what's going to happen in the next 12 months. Because the commitment, time, so there's a time commitment of being part of this social innovation experiment, at least for 12 months, because it will take that long to really make a difference in the world and make a difference in your practice. So what you can expect is we will have once a month Zoom conversations, which is as
close to face-to-face as we can get, given that our members are from many different countries. And we also have an online forum where we can collaborate on prototyping projects dear to your heart, transformative projects. This is what we already know that will happen. We will form triads, so you will become part of a smaller group with two other members of your choice with whom you can go deeper in the more intimate layers of personal development. And we will have also, it's basically a learning expedition that we are embarking on, because it's an uncharted territory, so we don't even have a map to it. And for with another metaphor, we are going to build the road as we walk on it, and that requires that that kind of explorer's consciousness who is interested in creating the map, contributing to the expedition log, documenting our discoveries for the benefit of the people who are going to come after us. So this is what I see happening. And since this is our convening meeting, I'm obviously curious of how does that fit with your sense of all the other commitments that you already have in your life, and it wouldn't make sense if this community would compete with your other commitments for your attention, for your energy. So it would work, I think that it would work for each of us only if we can see how the participation in the TIL facilitator stick-up can enhance your work on other areas, other professional work, and also your personal development. So, yeah, because if we add one more thing to do to our already quite busy life, then even if you think now that, oh, that sounds interesting, I want to give it a try, but it's very likely that you couldn't keep up with this rhythm of once a month Zoom calls and participation in the prototyping projects of your choice in between, and somehow in the, think of the Zoom, or the monthly conversation as the base camp of the expedition, where all the triads meet and share their discoveries and getting outfitted for the next leg of their journey. Yeah.
Before you close, George, inside the simulation, I'm a participant who don't know whether to stay on the plane or not. And I want to know, and I'm asking in general, I want to know what is the core capability that I will develop, that I would develop by being in a TCOP. It's a question about individual.
Yeah, that's a beautiful question, and that's a good example also that why this exploration needs your questions, because without that I can't think. With questions, I can think. So what comes up is that the core capability is a deep sense of what you would develop, both a deep sense of vertical solidarity across different stages of development, because you will have your peers, your peers who are working with you at the more or less the same level, and you will have the community or communities that you are supporting. And in that practice, you will be drawing on the strength of the collective intelligence and collective wisdom of your triad and of the whole learning expedition. So that's one of the capabilities that you already have, but you would strengthen that. And another important one is becoming an even more multidimensional human being. By multidimensional, I don't mean only the different facets through which, by which the creative impulse is manifesting in yourself, but I also mean multidimensional that a whole human being is not only an individual and not only a community person, but also a citizen, a conscious citizen that who is taking responsibility for the larger state of affairs that affects the quality of individual life and the quality of our life in our organizations and social systems. And I don't think that you will find many other places where you can develop this kind of competences.
Thank you. I think I will stay. Our time's up, but maybe we can take the 2 minutes of going, doing a very quick closing round, just with questions. I can begin. This is a vehicle for a journey. Not only is the journey have mystery in it, but the nature of the vehicle also has mystery in it. How does one prepare such a vehicle in a credible way?
I think this is a more specific version of the same question. What would be the, I don't want to settle for balance, what would be the synergy between the professional development and the personal vertical development in such a group? And the aspect of developing as a social change agent of the larger, I see those three strands, and how might they evolve together, and how might we understand the interaction among those more clearly?
How does belonging to a teacup stimulate the courage to address difficulty?
How will belonging, and not just belonging, but being active in a teacup work in a way that helps my courage, but also to connect to my shadow or unresolved issues and show up whole.
How to recognize playfulness in the difficulty?
I'm curious to learn how rejoice while rejoicing the membership in the teacup, experiencing growth processes in the individual and collective, while nurturing humility and patience towards what is happening outside the teacup.
So my question is, the transformative power, will it include the dimensions of awakening, evolution, cleaning up, so that we can show up as whole, healthy human beings?
My question is, how could I ever settle for less than knowing what my motivation is, expressing it through my work and realizing an impact that is beyond myself?
My question is, how can we start soon?
I don't have a question. I just want to do it. Because really, only then you will know it. Nobody knows ahead of time what it will be like. That moment you will know, you will feel it. So let's just do it.
I am curious how the Integral City journey that we've already started, that sounds like it has a very similar itinerary, might intersect on the timetable with the TCOP journey.
And I wonder what question we have to let go of to ask a good question.
What would the happy Tico lab look like, and who would live there physically?
I have nothing new or different.
Yeah, my question is also similar to Marilyn's. Like, how can different teacups or different developments strengthen each other? Like, what would a city of a planet of teacups look like?
How to sustain motivation through hard parts of life of teacup. A hard part of teacup.
My big, hairy, huge philosophical question is, how can I get a copy of the recording of all these questions so that it can get typed up and sent to you, so that you see the wisdom coming through these questions, see the seeds of the collective will emerging, and that's my practical question. So I will talk with the IEC people to try to figure out, and if there is a way, then I will make sure that if you put your email address there, and if you want to stay in touch, you will.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.